after about 2 years in business, there are some lessons I've learned that I think are going to be super relevant to you too, whether you're watching this now or in about 10 years' time. So stay tuned and let's see if your lessons in business match mine.
Welcome to Emma Gibbons Content and Copy. My name's Emma, and I'm the founder of a boutique agency specializing in branded copywriting and content writing for small and medium-sized businesses. I know from experience working with hundreds of businesses of all shapes and sizes that compassionate, client-centered copy and content ultimately does three incredibly powerful things. One, it helps your ideal client by matching them to a product or service that's going to improve their life. Two, it positions you as the guy they think of first and trust wholeheartedly. And three, it actually improves conversion and retention for a thriving business long-term. Are you excited to stand out to more of the clients you adore? Let's dive into some content and copy.
Lesson number one is to make yourself an apprentice. This is a really good tip for service providers. So rather than just starting with theory and then waiting to get started, feeling like you need to be qualified before you start to do the work, I would either do theory in tandem with the work or even a little bit after you've already started. So that doesn't mean going it alone though. And let me give you an example. As a copywriter, what I see a lot is that people will go to something like the American Writers and Artists Institute and take one of their foundations courses. And that's all they will do. They will just work on that for several months at a time. And then if they have another like full-time job they're still at, it could be a full year. And then they decide to start breaking into the world of copywriting. But you're going to have so much more value if when you decide this is something you want to do, you connect with a mentor. So someone who's built a copywriting business before, ideally when you're just first starting, and they can teach you not only some of the theory of copywriting and even give you some practice assignments, but they can also help you learn how to market yourself and do sales calls. And that's not to say that they're experts in those two areas, but the fact that they have done it for their own business and you're building the business is almost the same structure, they will be able to help you in this specific business type to do marketing and sales. So you'll be able to, by starting that way, learn some theory, but through practice, they'll explain some copywriting structures to you and you'll start practicing either by building your own website so you have something tangible and something that's going to be a resource for you to use for years to come, but also while you're bartering for service exchanges and other groups, you can practice and you can build a portfolio. And by having a portfolio, you'll be able to build your confidence. You'll be able to pitch for higher paid services or actually start charging for the first time. And it's going to just build such an amount of confidence that you're going to be able to strike out on your own. And at that point, that might be a good time to start to supplement with some more theory. Like if you know, I've tried a whole bunch of different things, but I love writing blog posts. So I really want to go into blog content writing. Then you might take theory courses that are about specifically that niche. And that is a really good time to make that investment. While you're already making some money, right? You already kind of have a proven business plan to start with at this stage. It's going to get you results so, so much faster. So my main tip for most service providers is to find yourself a mentor and start with real world experience before you decide to invest heavily in theory. Tip number two, there is a certain amount of investment that you're going to need at the beginning of your business before you make a profit. So that is in essential gaps to your knowledge in running a business. What I mostly focus on is I believe that if you can learn content marketing and you can learn sales, you'll have success early on in your business, and then you can reinvest in those bigger projects. So if you want a professional web designer to work on your stuff, if you finally know what you really are doing in business and now it's time to invest in visual branding. So when you're just starting and figuring things out, you just need to focus on getting seen and starting conversations with potential clients. So that's the content marketing piece. And you know, need to know how to close those potential clients so that they agree to let you do the work. And then you'll have that initial success. You'll have some profit, some, or at least some revenue coming in. And then you can reinvest into growing in other areas of your business. And you'll finally have enough clarity around your ideal client and what it is that you want to sell to be able to make those higher level investments. So something that's going to last you for 5 to 10 years, like beautiful branding. Plus, they're going to go through a process with you of solidifying your message as well around like what's your mission. And so if you have a sense of what it is you want to sell, it's going to be much more productive. This may be a little bit different with product-based business owners, but overall with service-based business owners, I would always say when you're just starting out, content marketing plus sales. So if you don't know how to do those two things, you're going to have to invest because you're busy in your zone of genius, right? So I did know content marketing. That's one of the things that I do in my business. So I was getting tons of leads at the very beginning, but I wasn't able to close them because I didn't know how to go through a sales call. You know, I didn't know, because it's quite different than copywriting or content writing. When you're actually needing to have a human, like face-to-face interaction, you need to make sure that there's some structure to that conversation, that you're building their confidence, knowing how to deal with objections. And you can do so in a very compassionate way, but it is its own structure. And so I was having such a hard time closing them that I invested in sales training. I did Authentic Selling University. And then because I was getting good results, I started working with the creator, Kendrick Shope, one-on-one. It made all the difference in the world. I had some months where it was almost nothing coming in because I was getting leads that I wasn't able to close. And then a $4,000 month. And then the month after that, $15,000. And then the month after that, $18,000 Canadian. Just by learning that key core missing piece. So marketing and sales, if you don't know how to do the two things, this is where you need to start investing. There are a couple of other places that you might need to invest in super early on, which is to a certain extent, some legal support, right? You want to make sure that you've got contracts in place when you're doing any work with people. So you might want to invest at least in a good contract template that is available for your area. I'll put a link below to the template site that my lawyer actually has created. It's really good quality and quite affordable. There's even like a starter kit down there. So that is something you probably want to invest in the beginning of your business to make sure that you're protected and that you have some clear guidelines in place as to how you work with your clients. But I would say other than that, marketing plus sales. My next lesson is that one-on-one engagement is always going to be worth it. And that's even true of some of the busiest people out there. So let me give you an example. People right now, as I'm filming this video, have a lot of online fatigue, and there's a lot of feeling like there's just consumerism is making people very uncomfortable at the moment. So someone who's massive in the world of online business, Stephel Thomas, when she did a challenge in late 2021 on a Facebook group, you had to also sign up by email, or at least it was one of the options. And I was trying to learn from this challenge that she was running. So I signed up. And I got a personalized email. She ended up saying recently that the amount of personalized videos, so there was a video in that email that said my name, and then probably a little tiny script after that, but whatever, it said my name. She did 10,000 of those. And she had amazing results because she was able to make people feel seen and special and like they were worth that time that she had to put in. And I'm not saying you have to do that. That's really intense and it's quite impressive. But as you're growing your business, for sure, you're going to have time to send a personalized little video message to someone who maybe signs up for your email list, or if that feels like a bit much, if you have a webinar going on, that's a good time to send them a personalized video. If they sign up for a wait list and you're going to open up the course or you're going to open up your services, sending them a personalized video invite at that time is a great idea. I just think that that's a really good example of one-on-one services and one-on-one engagement, but that's also true when you're trying to bring in clients like actively. So being able to reach out to a colleague specifically one-on-one to say, you know, if there's anyone that you know is looking for this type of service, please send them to me. And sometimes it ends up being that person. You know, you can even say like, if you know of anyone, but you know that that colleague could or peer in the industry, something like that, that they could use their help, being able to put yourself out there and just let them know with like a no pressure kind of thing can end up getting you some good results in terms of, hey, that would actually be great for me. Wait a second. I'm not going to go over free to other people until I'm signed up. So any example of one-on-one engagement will really create personal relationships and a lot of trust that makes people want to work with you. It's very, very valuable. Even when you think you're super busy, if you can make a little bit of time to do just a portion of your list, for example, to send a couple of them some videos, you will have some amazing results. So I've even gotten responses. Like I've sent Loom videos before and I've gotten a Loom response from one of those people before, not just an email response. So, and that person's one of my like top email opens, but we never worked together yet. It's going to come because there's no reason why they wouldn't want to work with me after we have basically such a tight friendship built through this one-to-one engagement. It's pretty cool. Next lesson is that clients and customers can be wrong. The customer is not always right. Oftentimes though, it's a matter of educating them, right? So maybe it's that you need to let people know how to give you feedback by building that into your welcome guide, having a handy how to give constructive feedback guide. I always, when I deliver copy, have the first page. And this is something I learned from a fellow business owner. It's not something that I came into this world knowing. Basically, a page with some great tips around why it's so important to provide this amount of feedback so they'll get the best results, etc. But with actually like set phrases that they can use. So this doesn't sound exactly, this word doesn't sound exactly like my ideal client. I think they might use this word instead. So super like specific can make your life a lot easier, and it educates them around how to give you productive feedback, let's say. So that's one example. Let's see what else we can do. So it could also be just around how to communicate with you. That's another thing that's for the welcome guide oftentimes, but it's also, you know, you want to be consistent with setting your boundaries. So sometimes they could overstep it and that's wrong, but it's not necessarily intentional. So it's just a matter of educating. But there are times when you will come across people who are not treating you very well. What they're doing is actually something that I would consider wrong. To give you an example, I had one brand new client who I have set hours for my Voxer support. Sometimes I'll get back to people on the weekend as well if I want to give them something a little bit more thorough. But for the most part, people know that I'm around from Monday to Friday from about 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. and I'll give them fairly timely feedback if they have Voxer support in the first place. This is not part of every single service I provide. But I had one client who on a holiday Friday after 6:30 p.m. Sent me quite an angry message that they were confused by the Google Drive. And I can understand that. This person was a little bit older. So I offered to, you know, first thing on Monday, I think I offered like a 10 a.m. spot or something like that. Let's just hop on and we can go over some of the technical parts of just how to make sure that their writing coaching experience went super smoothly. But instead of saying like, oh, that'd be great, which is, this is something above and beyond what I normally do, but I want to make sure that they have a good experience and that it's easy for them to use the resources I provide. But they, on this walkie-talkie app, Voxer, decided that that wasn't good enough and they started to yell at me. And the yelling thing, you know, the fact that it wasn't very understanding to begin with, nothing was going to happen over the weekend. They couldn't get my support until the following week anyway. So, but more than anything was the yelling. And so that was, that just crossed the line, and the trust that I had with them was lost, and not knowing how they were going to treat me or my team. So I ended up letting them go. So that can happen from time to time, even if you have a product-based business as well. But it's just about knowing, I think, when you go in where your boundaries are, and realizing that there it's possible for people to overstep them. The customer is not always right. But most of the time, it's just a matter of educating. So hopefully that lesson makes sense. I'd love to know if you've ever encountered any situation where the customer was wrong too, and how you handled it. It would be really helpful for me and for everybody else in the comments. Okay, our penultimate lesson is that entrepreneurship is a personal development bootcamp. Absolutely. You're constantly meeting new people. You're constantly learning to communicate face-to-face, via Zoom, via Loom videos, via email, via messages. Like, there's all sorts of different tones involved and potential misunderstandings. And so you learn a lot about about yourself and what works for you, but also about a different personality and how to interact with so many different people. So I feel like that's a huge part of the personal development bootcamp, but there's also a part of, you know, the money mindset thing and getting used to disconnecting really your inherent value from the value of your services, and making sure also that you're still pricing those services accordingly. Even though it feels scary sometimes when you're raising your prices, you've got to make sure that those are relevant to the service you provide, the hours that you know are going to be behind the scenes in them, what industry standards are. So there's a lot of mindset stuff that goes on as well. And I just want to really highlight that. I think that comes up a lot with money mindset more than anything else, I would really say. And you're also just going to have so many opportunities to make choices for the first time, especially if you've had a full-time job before, if you just came out of school. Suddenly you get to have a lot of choice over where you work, you know, when you work, and you could work at any hour of the day. That's part of the problem, right? There's always something more you can do for your business. Just like if you're in university and there's always another text you could read, but you have to know when to turn off the computer, when to leave the shop, wherever it is that you do your work, and to just take some time for self-care. So that's another piece of that personal development. And it's very valuable, but it can be challenging. So that's why on the YouTube channel only, if you're on YouTube already, you'll see a link in the card and the description box below. There is a whole video that I made about mental health tips for entrepreneurs. So hopefully those can help you during any of those challenging moments. Overall, the personal development is definitely worthwhile. So my last lesson is potentially a little controversial, and it's just around the word freelancer. In my experience, I have used the word freelancer, I've used the word solopreneur, and then I've talked about the fact that I own a boutique. And I think that they kind of match the different phase I was at each moment in the business. But there's also something interesting that I think happened specific to the word freelancer. So I only used the word freelancer for a while before I considered this a real business, which is why the name of the video is About 2 Years in Business, because technically I have been providing my services on a freelance basis before that 2 year point. Between leaving my full-time job and starting my master's degree, and then I actually left that master's degree to go full-time in my business. That's when I really considered my business started, but there was that transitional period between the job and the master's degree that I thought was going to be the direction I would go in. But when I was using the word freelancer, I had a much harder time finding clients, honestly. And I think that it's because there is not the same level of respect that comes with the word freelancer as comes with entrepreneur, solopreneur, and certainly talking about owning an agency or a boutique. That's a whole other level. And I think that's partly because people think freelancers are cheap. People think freelancers are just there for a quick project and they're out. They don't expect a lot of strategy, or they don't consider that person the type of expert that they want strategy from a lot of the time. And I'd love to know if your experience is different, but this is what I saw over and over and over again, not just with me, but also from other people who were calling themselves freelancers. So, you know, people in Facebook groups or anything like that. I think things like Fiverr have set up that expectation, things like Upwork. And it really frustrates me because this is not, it's not supposed to be cheap and quick. That's not what freelancer means. Freelancer just means that you're free to work for many different people and you're working on your own time with your own schedule, right? So I would probably recommend that most service providers stay away from the word freelancer from the beginning. I would use the word solopreneur or entrepreneur for the longest time in your business until you actually start to build a team. And then absolutely, if the word agency or boutique or anything like that suits you, I found that that was a whole other level of respect that inherently came with that term. When I officially started my business, so when I really took into account that this was a business, that was about January to February 2020. And that's when I actually went full time into business building. And at that point, I called myself an entrepreneur or a solopreneur. And I felt like the amount of respect that I got, comfort and expectations around what level of strategy might be involved, what kind of price point, it all changed at that point. So I would definitely recommend that you go with a term like solopreneur or entrepreneur. And then as soon as you can, and if this is something you're building towards, agency or boutique, as soon as I was able to start using those terms, because I have a bit of a team, that made all the difference in the world. Suddenly I was able to really position us as more premium, both in terms of our pricing, the clients we work with, expectations around the level of strategy I like to provide. People want that or are actually seeking me because of that. They're comfortable with the fact that there's going to be multiple people working on some of their projects. It just made it so much easier for those expectations to match, in those people, like the expectations of what we actually do as a business, that we are a business, you know, we deserve the same respect any other business that has, you know, a physical shop front needs to have. So I would recommend staying away from the word freelancer in summary, solopreneur, entrepreneur, or if you can, considering terms that really elevate the feel and the seriousness of your business, like agency or boutique, whenever you can, if that's something you're building to. Thank you so much for joining me. I'd love to hear if you agreed with these lessons in the comments below, or if there's any you'd warn me about as well.
Thank you so much for tuning in to Emma Givens Content and Copy. If you had an aha moment or insight from today's episode, let's make it stick by writing it down in a review. It would actually mean the world to me and my entire team. You can write a review on Apple Podcasts, then screenshot it and tag me on Instagram at Emma Givens Writer. I'd be thrilled to start a conversation with you and reshare your big aha moment with the rest of the audience. Until next time, remember, your voice matters. Let's set it free. See you next week for another episode of Emma Givens Content and Copy.